ज्ञानतिमिरन्धस्याज्ञनञ्जनशलाकया चाक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः। नाम श्रेष्ठं मनुमापि सच्चिपुत्रमत्र स्वरूपं रूपं तस्याग्रजमरूपुरीं माथुरीं गोष्ठावतीं राधाकुन्दं गिरिवरं महोराधिकमधावशं प्राप्तो यस्या प्रतीत्तकृपाया श्रीगुरुं तं नतोऽस्मि। वञ्चकल्पतरुभ्यश्च कृपासिन्धुभ्यैव च पतितानं पवनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः। निखिलश्रुतिमौलिरत्नमालयति निराजिता पदपङ्कजन्त आजीमुक्तकुलैरुपश्यामनं परितष्टं हरिणं संश्रयामि। नारपितचरिं चिरात् करुणयावतरणाकलौ क्षमार्पयितमुन्नतोज्ज्वलरासं स्वभक्तिश्रियं हरिपुरतसुन्दरादियुतिकदम्बसन्दीपितः सदा हृदये कन्दरे स्फुरतो वासचिनन्दनः। अजानलम्बिता भुजो कनकावदातु सङ्कीर्तनैकपितरो कमलायतक्षु विश्वाम्बरुद्वियाबरो जुगधार्मपालो मन्दी जगत्प्रियकरो करुणावतारो। लदिनीशक्तिस्वरूपाय गौरङ्गसुहृदाय च भक्तशक्तिप्रदनाय गदाधर नमस्तुते। हे कृष्णकरुणा सिन्धो दीनबन्धो जगत्पते गोपेश गोपीका कान्त राधा कान्त नमोऽस्तुते। राधे वृन्दवनादिशे करुणामृतवाहिनी कृपया निजपादब्जादस्यन्मह्यं प्रदीयतम्। भक्त्या विहीनाय अपराधलक्षये क्षिप्तशाकमादितरङ्गमाध्ये कृपामयि त्वं चरणं प्रपानं वृन्दे नमस्ते चरणारविन्दं वृन्दे नमस्ते चरणारविन्दम्। श्री सचिनन्दन गौर हरि की जय। श्री हरिनाम प्रभु की जय। श्री श्री गौर नित्यानंद की जय। श्री श्री गौर गदाधर जी की जय। श्री श्री राधा मदन मोहन राधा गोविंद राधा गोपीनाथ जी की जय। गौर भक्त वृंद की जय। गौर प्रेमानंद हरि वो। सो वेलकम टू ऑल ऑफ यू। Pranam, Dandavat, thank you so much for coming. And it was not in my plan to do this meeting, as it was not in my plan to come to Alacha for a second time. So again, it's confirmed that there is someone else with his own transcendental agenda and diary and different plans. So we are happy to be part of that. So yeah, we have considered to do one meeting today, one meeting on Saturday. In the context of questions and answers, what we call sometimes Ishtagosti. Ishtagosti is mostly, as the very word says, it means to get together, Gosti, to reunite around our Ishta, around our deity, around our common center, to get together to remind each other of how we already are constellating around the center and how we should express that awareness of that constellation. When I realize that every entity is constellating around the common center, how that it looks like in practice, so to say. And that's what we call bhakti. Sambandha comes before, then comes avideya or bhakti. Sambandha means the knowledge makes us aware that there is a common center, a common unity. That's why we can have community. There is a common unity with a common center. And from that awareness, oh, everything is revolving around a common center. How do I express that fact in my lifestyle? That's called avideya. And avideya means bhakti. So that's interesting, no? Because bhakti, what we call bhakti or devotional service, is nothing but the natural result of getting to know how everything is interconnected and revolving around the common center, which is, of course, the all-attractive common center, no? Like a magnet that is driving everything in that direction. So the way to celebrate those news is called bhakti, something like that, avideya. And to practice from that place of celebration, to practice with that awareness, with that consciousness, with that Krishna consciousness, gives us the result and result prayojan, more of that celebration, more of that awareness in newer and newer dimensions. So that's basically what the whole Vedas talked about, these three things, sambandha, avideya, and prayojan. How to develop a proper cosmovision, worldview, what is what to do with that, and what's the fruit of that. So Ishtagosti basically means that. The word means Ishtagosti, and to reunite in connection to our Ishta, our worshipable deity, our center, our loving center, common center, and remind each other of that connectivity, interrelation. Sorry. And of course, when we become aware of the nature of that center, we realize there is no end to how much we can talk about this. There is no end to how much we can celebrate this. That's why Krishna says, Machitam atkatapana bodhayanta parashparam katayantaschamam nityam tushyanticharamanticha. That's one of the most important verses of the Gita, where Krishna says, what devotees do when they hang out with each other. That's the actual hanging out. They get together, absorbed in me, and they talk about me, they're in love with me, and they there's no end to their kata about me. They start to talk about me, and it's like no return ticket, so to say. That's like how Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur will put it. No? The disciple goes to Gurus with no return ticket. And if you come with a return ticket in your pocket, you give it, and the Guru will like, okay. And we use the paper to celebrate them. We make a piñata, you say? We put all the return tickets inside that. Always celebrate the nature of the journey, which is no return, because there's an endless exploration ahead. We have the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and we have the Supreme Personality of God ahead. What we have ahead of us, there's a Supreme Personality of God. As we say, I like to make play of words, sorry. Supreme means that also in Sanskrit. Supreme means Suprema. Prema means divine love, and Su means very good prema, very good love. So whatever is supreme is very good and in constant expansion. That's why bhakti is, the nature of bhakti is you can engage in it forever. Bhaktya sanjataya bhaktya, says the Bhagavatam. And the result of bhakti is bhakti. Bhakti comes from bhakti, bhakti takes to bhakti. There is nothing separate from that. Bhakti to bhakti to bhakti to further bhakti and so on and so forth. And that's why we can engage in bhakti perpetually, and it's never stale, never boring. Mahaprabhu said, kirtaniya sadahari. You can engage in kirtan forever, literally. Krishna says in the Gita, satatam kirtayantamam, basically the same thing, forever doing kirtan. Katayantas chamam nityam, forever talking about me, always, eternally. So the nature of the topic must be inexhaustible, because if not, we are condemned to eternal boredom. No? Imagine if forever you are doing something that is stale, stagnant, static, not ecstatic, but static. It's like, oh my gosh, that's the worst hell. No, that's the best heaven, because the nature there is ever evolving, ever expanding. There's one quote that I found. I mean, I read it in the past, but I refound it recently, and including that in the book I'm writing now in this connection. And with this, we go to Q&A. I promise questions. We are warming up here. So Srila Prabhupada says in Nectar of Devotion, page 189, for those who do not believe me, he says, Krishna is always remembered and his name is always chanted by millions of devotees, but the devotees never become saturated. Instead of becoming disinterested in thinking of Krishna and in chanting his holy name, the devotees get newer and newer impetus to continue the process. Therefore, Krishna is ever fresh. Not only Krishna himself, but also Krishna's knowledge is ever fresh. Bhagavad Gita, which was imparted 5,000 years ago, is still being read repeatedly by many, many men, and still new light and woman, and still new light is always being found in it. Therefore, Krishna and his name, fame, qualities, and everything in relationship with him is ever fresh. And everything in relationship with him, which happens to be everything, including us, our potential, is ever fresh. So that's a truth. Those are the facts. Krishna is ever fresh, ever evolving. Then his qualities, the conversation about him, bhakti, us in connection to that, everything in connection to the center is ever fresh. So that's basically the idea of getting us together here today, just to share some thoughts on this ever freshness and never looking for conclusive answers in one sense, because if something is ever fresh, there's always something else that can be said about it. There's never a final word. If you don't believe me, ask to Ananta Shesh. Ananta Shesh, from time immemorial, is an aspect of God himself trying to glorify God. Try to imagine. If God himself tried to glorify himself without any tinge of narcissism, you will conclude he will do it very nice. And he's doing very nice. And because he's doing it very nicely, he finds no end to that. No end, no limit to what can be said. So what to speak of us trying to say something about the absolute. But something we can say, a lot is beyond our grasp, and that keeps us humbled by the infinite nature of the subject matter. So here we go. Fasten your seatbelts and journey begins. So that's it. Any question is welcome. If not a question, it's a topic or a comment or something you may like to bring to the table, to bring to the circle, so we can all together honor whatever topic is presented in a sincere way. No? Like the other day I was reading in the Bhagavatam, when Sauna Karishi brings a topic to Sutta Goswami in Naimir Sharanya, to say that Sutta Goswami for answering, and it says he attempted to answer, no? Like implying so much can be said. So I will try to say something. The nature of the subject is such that I can only attempt to say something. But before he tried to say something, Pratipuja, the Bhagavatam said, he honored the questioner and the question. Pratipuja. Pratipuja means like worship. And prati many times is like something that is done in every direction possible. So somehow he first honored the question and the questioner, and then in a very humble way he tried to say something. So that's the spirit to embrace in this type of interactions. Now we are dealing both questioner and answerer, speaker, both are dealing with something that is beyond our grasp, but all of us are trying to create some synergy, communion all together, so something that is beyond us can manifest through us. That's the magic of sadhu sangha, no? That something that is beyond you and me manifest through you and me when somehow we get together with sincerity. So that's what we are trying to invoke in this type of meetings. So that's it. Mahara, please. Thank you.
So I had a question about, I know you've spoken about this before, but I guess I'm kind of getting the wrong impression about it, because I'm sure you're not saying anything that's not like nice or something, but.
You never know. You never know.
But I kind of felt like you were saying something that wasn't so great, but I just feel like the kids that are doing kirtan nowadays, they're, I feel like they're really devotional, and although they maybe not, they don't read, I know you might feel like they should read more or hear more topics about Krishna guitar instead of doing like 24-hour kirtans or 6-hour kirtans, but I feel like they're really coming from a past birth where they're very evolved, and they can sit through kirtans for hours and hours and really taste the holy name, and so I feel like, because I learned that verse.
I know it, I know it. That's a personal joke that the three of us only understand. No need to quote it. Teshame vanu kam partam.
To show them special mercy, I dwell in your hearts, destroyed with the shadow of knowledge, the darkness born of ignorance. And I heard Prabhupada say in a lecture that he was telling the devotees, you don't really need to read, because even if you just chant, Krishna will reveal everything to you. But I would like you to read, because if you meet people, I want you to be able to explain the philosophy and defeat them. You know, defeat them if you need to. And so, but in that sense, I was thinking about these kids. I just feel like they're really evolved, and they really are tasting the holy name and feeling something more than even I don't feel like, you know, I can't sit through hours and hours of your time. So anyway, I just wanted to talk about that. So I'm going to be fit. And I hope I wasn't being offensive.
I'm all my moms here every time I travel, so. So yeah, of course, a few words on that. Yeah, I remember recently I mentioned something to the effect of, again, and these are general statements, are not like speaking about every specific individual, but in general, I mentioned that personally, and it's my personal opinion, I'm not saying everyone has to submit to that or anything, that I consider that it may be balancing in a kirtan festival when we sing like 24 hours or 8 hours to make intervals in between the kirtan and share some words about kirtan. No, which for me is non-different from kirtan. No, I'm not saying if we're interrupting the kirtan to speak harikata. Harikata is kirtan. So that's an important point to understand. Kirtan is not merely musical glorification. It is, but not only that. For example, it's interesting when there are these 9 main angas of bhakti, Shravan, Kirtan, Vishnu, Smaran, and so on. And when it is described, the different devotees who attain perfection by each one of them. Shravanam is Parikshit Maharaj has mentioned, right? He attained perfection by hearing. So then comes Kirtan. Who is the prime example of perfection through Kirtan? Sukadev Goswami. Have we heard Sukadev Goswami playing mridang and kartals? Which was his kirtan? Speaking the Bhagavata. So that's interesting, right? Because the definition is kirtan. Who is the main example in one sense of kirtan? Someone who is not doing kirtan. In one sense, not doing kirtan, of course. It's not that he was against kirtan. But he was absorbing speaking the Bhagavata. And that was his kirtan. That took him to perfection, to the point that he will fall in trance, and they will have to invoke the other kirtan, the musical one. Parikshit Maharaj had arranged kartals and mridanga nearby, so when Sukadev Goswami fell in trance, they will awaken him, because Parikshit had 7 days to live, and he wanted to hear Krishna Lila especially, no? So that for me is an important point to make. When I was saying this idea of speaking Harikatha in between the kirtan, I'm just saying continuing with the kirtan from a different place, which is supportive to the other kirtan. So I'm never saying stop the kirtan. Kirtaniya sadahari. Mahaprabhu himself will say kirtan forever, non-stop. But even if we study how that played out in the Gaur Lila, it used to start by Harikatha. So Mahaprabhu will start to share with his associates the qualities of Krishna, the beauty of Krishna, and his praise of Krishna started to become so, he became so consumed by his katha that there was no chance but to continue to start doing kirtan. He started to speak and sing and dance and pick the mridang and kartals, and the Harikatha took to Sankirtan, and when the Sankirtan reached its own zenith, they sat and started to share what was their experience in Sankirtan. That became another level of Harikatha, and that new level of Harikatha eventually reached another level of Sankirtan and so on. So when I'm suggesting that, is just also a way of for us to gain appreciation that Harikatha is Kirtan. Because again, sometimes we may be a little bit reductionistic in our ideas. We may think, okay, kirtan means this only. And it becomes so reduced that even sometimes, and I'm saying that with all respect, but that happens. Sometimes only the musical expertise is considered at some point. And we just tend to describe, okay, he's a great kirtaniya. And we are just pointing to how lofty melodies that person is bringing. That person may have, I'm not saying that person doesn't have bhakti or anything, but just saying our appreciation of that may be just exclusively on musical terms. You follow my point? So that is very reductionistic of the idea of kirtan, which not only includes, of course, mainly what's going on inside, but even other forms of that as Harikatha and so on. So I mainly make that point to make that point. Because if not, sometimes there can be a tendency that the kirtan becomes too musical. I mean, I'm a musician myself, and I know those temptations, so to say. I'm not saying everyone is doing that. Again, I'm not judging. I'm not putting a whole generation into the same box, right? Everyone is an individual, and I want to be radically personal. I don't want to be impersonal saying, all these gurukulis are all, I never say anything like that, because I don't think like that. I know so many devotees like the ones you are referring to, who, as you say, I wish I will have that taste for kirtan. I wish I will have that, I appreciate the unique birth they had and so on and so forth. But that doesn't cancel the other thing. That's my point. Because I've seen both things. I'm not trying to convince anyone, but I'm seeing that many of you also agree with it. I've seen both things. I've seen people who really have a taste for that and can be absorbed in kirtan for hours. And I'm not thinking, let's interrupt that. No, great. Let's celebrate it. Let's join their celebration. But sometimes I've seen that it can get too musical. Not that mystical, but more musical. And I have nothing against music. Again, I love music. But it's a subtle line, no? Because externally it's kirtan, but what's going on internally? No? I'm really going deeper into my praise of the name, or I'm being more and more distracted or attentive to the musicality of the whole thing, which on some level is there to be in supportive role, but the predominance of the kirtan is the name. No? The music is to support the chanting and the mood of the chanting. No? The musicality and the instrumentation and all that is to support that or to evoke the proper feelings. If you play certain ragas and certain time of the day. I'm just saying that. I'm not on a campaign of, okay, from now on the kirtan, let's just bring it, just mridang and clapping, so it's more minimalistic and now it gets too musical here. I'm not saying that. I'm just starting with myself, a note of caution in terms of, at least in potential, one can become distracted. Externally, it seems like kirtan, but it may not be kirtan in every sense of the term. It can happen with any practice of bhakti, not only kirtan. Externally, it seems I'm worshipping. Externally, it seems I'm offering respect. Externally, it seems I know the Bhagavatam a lot, but where is my heart? No. At the end of the day, Bhava Grahi Janardana. Krishna is taking the essence of your intention. That's bhakti. Anukulyena Krishna Anusilana Bhakti Gautama. So that's mostly my point, right? If someone can engage in kirtan for many hours, that's great, as long as they are engaging in kirtan. You follow my point? Because it also can become like a rock concert or something. I mean, I was a teenager, I was a musician, I went to lots of rock concerts, and I could be there for hours. So you follow my point? So you can just switch to now to devotional music and continue in that, from that place of participation. And my point is, that's not ideal. Of course, I will say it's better to do that than when you were in the rock concert. So I can understand this for some people, okay, enjoy musically and still there is a benefit. I'm not denying that. But also I'm saying, do not establish that as the standard for the rest of your life, because we are to grow in our participation of kirtan. So, and again, we are not here to judge other people. How much you are participating in kirtan today? Oh, you are a sense of joy. You are enjoying the particular melody that he's... That's just for oneself, no? Like to be strict with me and merciful with others, so to say, no? Like from which place I'm being part of Sankirtan. And Sankirtan is a yajna. So yajna implies there has to be some type of sacrifice. Samitpani Shrotriyam Brahmanishtam Tad Vigyanartam Sagurumeva Vigachet, say the Upanishad. The disciple is Samitpani. You have to bring wood for the sacrifice. No, that's this Upanishadic way of saying a disciple has to have some willingness to sacrifice, to sacrifice something. Because love is about sacrifice, and Sankirtan is an expression of love. So there must be something that is being put on the fire, because we are talking in terms of yajna here, of sacrifice. So something has to be put on the fire, yajna, sankirtan. And someone will say, okay, Maharaj, but we have no love. So we are not engaged in the prem sankirtan, the gadadhar, srivas, and everyone in sriva sangha were engaging. Okay, but we could say the beginning of love, let's begin where we can begin to express love. Let's begin by cooperating with one another. Cooperation is a good beginning to love. So let's cooperate in Sankirtan. So what does it mean, let's cooperate in Sankirtan? We'll engage together in this yajna. And each of us is committing to not bring to the yajna your false ego, your self-centeredness, and all these tendencies that sometimes on a daily basis may be more prominent. Now we are entering to this fire of sacrifice of the Sankirtan Yajna. We'll make a special effort to not allow the things to get in the way of the collective sacrifice we are about to do. So that's a sacrifice, that's an effort that at one point we are invited to do as committed members of a Sampradaya. So it's not just, okay, I'll go to the... Again, in the beginning, it can be like that, but at some point, not. Like, okay, I'll go to the kirtan and have fun, and it will be a musical party and hanging out with the girls and boys and kijai. On some level, that's perfect. Again, I'm not condemning that. But at some level, something else should be brought. Unless you want to remain on some level forever, which is not the idea. Hopefully, this doesn't sound like, oh, Maharaj started to smash everyone. Where is his danda? He's becoming fanatical and he's like, bum, bum, bum. I'm not saying that. But we have to be also progressive, no, right? We have to understand there are different degrees to do things. If we don't have that prospect, we can just become trapped thinking, oh, I can do this in this kindergarten level forever. And that's it. But there are so many more ways to continue doing that deeper and deeper. So... anyhow, some thoughts in that connection. And of course, I agree, if someone is sincere, naturally that will take the person to participate in deeper ways and in deeper ways and in deeper ways. One can be, of course, singing and chanting. Ideally, the better you engage in Sankirtan, the more you will be able to continue engaging in Sankirtan. So, but I will say that Harikatha again is a form of Kirtan, and somehow in the stages that most of us are, it's good to have some reminders about what we are doing when we are doing Sankirtan. What's this whole sacrifice about? So for me, again, that's my ideal model. It doesn't mean that it has to be universally established. I'm just sharing my perspective, and everyone can have their perspective. But I think it's very balanced. No, we engage in Sankirtan, and then we talk about what Sankirtan is about, and we remind each other in case during the previous Sankirtan our mind went somewhere else. So we bring it back. And we do Sankirtan again. And just in case the mind went somewhere else, we'll then share a few other words about what we are supposed to do here. And that's basically our daily life. You know? These meetings are about that also. Receiving some reminders of what was actually the whole idea of being a devotee. Pranada, you have something to say in that connection?
Just a couple comments. Yeah. Well, I don't remember the exact quote, but when I was doing some research for Pran Kirtan, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur made a point that you can't just have Kirtan, you have to have Katha along with Kirtan.
Yeah.
And I could find the quote, but it was he made it very clear. The other thing is, it seems, you know, when you think of Sankirtan, it's a group Kirtan, and it's meant for group participation. And on the musicality side, a lot of times we're finding this. You know, they're very talented musicians. They come up with tunes that you can't follow.
Mm-hmm.
You can't sing along with because they're complex. And you just, even if you hear them several times, you're like, I'm not sure how that tune goes.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's one thing that I find is sometimes a little disconcerting in the new kirtans, that they're so talented, but they lose the audience.
Mm.
And so then it's not Sankirtan. You can't even follow the tune.
Mm. And of course, sometimes, I'm not saying always, but sometimes that can be tied with the idea of, again, impressing the audience with a new tune. But the point is, Sankirtan is not about impressing anyone.
It may not be impressing the audience, but they're having fun as musicians.
Yeah, but sometimes there is the intention to impress the audience, I can tell you. and again, the idea is mostly to receive impressions, bhakti samskars, during Sankirtan, not so much like impressing others, so to say, by being impressed by bhakti shakti. So again, at the end of the day, we are not pointing to any person, to any group, but just so each one is more vigilant and introspective when one is participating. But I appreciate the point of Pranada, how to make it participatory, no? Like, yes.
Just a comment. I've seen some of the devotee kirtaniyas, they'll actually read for a little bit. They'll read a paragraph or something from one of Srila Prabhupada's books that might be part of, like, I know there's a monthly Sankirtan festival, and the devotees will read before they chant to get somebody into aware of a Krishna's pastime or something, which is, I think would be a nice thing that would maybe satisfy what you're saying, is that, you know, in between the kirtans, if somebody is to read a paragraph from Bhagavad Gita or something from Chaitanya Charitamrita, and then there's also not just the it's not just Hare Krishna kirtan, but some bhajans are really nice too, because then if you have the words up there on the screen where it's, you know, it's a pastime, then and that makes it very nice too.
That's my
comment.
Thank you. Yeah, there are so many considerations. I even personally have no problem if someone would like to translate certain kirtans and bhajans into one's local language and sing them in that language. Because sometimes also that's another thing, no? If you sing in Sanskrit and you are more, if you don't know the kirtan, you are more aware of like pronouncing and really your heart may not be fully there and you may not even understand what you are saying, but it's nice nonetheless on some level, but it may be better if you understand what you are singing about. So whether you learn Sanskrit or sometimes I've seen the devotees translate into their local language, and that's not diminishing the power of the practice. Today was shared a quote by Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati that he will say, you know, Sanskrit is not conveying the absolute truth more than any other language. You know, as long as, and if your heart is there, any language potentially can hide or reveal the absolute. It all has to do where the heart is. And one more thing that comes to mind in terms of sharing in between kirtans, also something that I personally consider is very, could be something very natural and very inspiring, is not even, of course, we can read something or we can say some words about what Sankirtan is, but also each one or those who want can just share some words about their experience with the previous kirtan that just ended, so to say, you know, like how I feel, what happened. That's something also very inspiring. I mean, I've been in certain circles where that was presented and it's like beautiful. It's very personal. Not only kirtan is this and kirtan is that and we are supposed to do that or this lila, but what happened to me, how I felt. Even if you have to say, I didn't feel anything. Thank you for your contribution. We welcome that sincerity, so to say. That's also, again, it's not that we are crafting some like heterodox practices here. No, it's less, like a natural extension and overflow of kirtan. Okay. Like if you are in a class and the class really touched your heart, after the class, probably you will continue talking about the class, your feelings, your thoughts. And the class was kirtan, remember. Harikata is kirtan. So after the kirtan, you continue talking about the kirtan. So the same can happen with sankirtan or with anything, ideally. Yeah, endless topic. But thank you, Mahara, for your contribution. Thank you. Something else, Archan Siddhi?
I don't know if it was something that you had posted, but I read it recently about some study that was done that actually showed that when people would sing in their own language, it would affect their heart, that they were having more of an emotional experience when they were singing in another language. Did you post that? Well, it was somewhere. I'll have to find it. That,
can you share it, please?
Yes, I'll have to. No,
yeah,
yeah,
and that's supported also not only by modern science, but I mean there are statements by Prabhupada Bhaktisiddhanta who will say also chanting your language in the Bhagavatam. There are some verses where spoken about singing one's native tongue and glorifying the Lord in local languages. I mean, it's common sense again, as we're talking these days, which is not so common sometimes, but it makes sense that. It's like, okay, I'll go to Mass in Latin. It sounds beautiful, but I don't have a clue what they are talking about. But it sounds nice. I'm not denying that. So it's with Sanskrit also, wow, it sounds beautiful. But what you are singing about? I don't have an idea. So there is some connection, some appreciation, but the full immersion may come when we get to know what this is about. So yeah, I personally can give my testimony in the sense that I'm from Argentina, as you know, so my native language is native tongue, is Spanish. And down there, as I was telling Pranada today, the group I had been part for the first two decades of practice, we had all the songs of the Vaishnava songbook in their original Sanskrit or Bengali and in Spanish, translated with the same rhyme, with the same meter, with the same melody, but in our local language. So sometimes we will sing in Sanskrit and Bengali, but sometimes we will sing the same song in Spanish. which even helps you not only to sing your language, but to relate what the original words mean. And yeah, I can tell you that it helps. You can like direct your feeling in a more natural way. I imagine in terms of research, there's a whole neurological explanation and connection between you say something that you understand and that helps for the emotional expression of that. So it's common sense. Yeah. Yeah. And you ultimately, as we were talking today in the morning, the ultimate language is not Sanskrit, nor Bengali, nor Brijbasi. The ultimate language is Prem, divine love. Sometimes some people ask, so which language do they speak in the spiritual world? Love. That's the actual meaning of the language. Externally, it may take one form or another, but the actual language is heart connection. Like if you go to a country, to China, you don't speak Chinese, you cannot connect on that level. But if you connect with the person in the heart level, even gestures, and you connect. You speak the same language. If you enter in that alliance, you align with that, you will connect more maybe than with people that speak your language. But it's like, it's like going in another direction. So, yeah. The ultimate language is Prem, basically. Something else? Not doesn't have to be related to one particular topic, of course. It can be in any direction. Katie, yes.
Sometimes I feel like I'm in my practice of Christian consciousness engaging in more becoming than being. Like I'm always just trying to be someone else, like this better version of some, you know, myself.
Mm-hmm.
And then I feel like I'm losing myself. Like I don't know who I am because I'm always trying to be someone else and someone better and someone more advanced. So how can we balance being and becoming?
Yes, thank you. So how, I'm repeating briefly, I'm streaming, that's why I have the computer here. So you are asking how we can balance being and becoming, because sometimes we want to become something else or someone else instead of embracing who we are, being present here, become obsessed with the future tense instead of becoming obsessed with the present tense. So, where to begin? I've been recently writing about that. Because we are human beings, but also we are human becomings. We have a potential. We are Tathasta Shakti. So the soul is Tathasta Shakti. Tathasta Shakti can be translated as a unit of potential. So we are something, but we are endowed with potential. So that's important to understand. No? So we are something, but that something includes potential. So we are something, and that includes all that we can be in that being something. Right? That's applicable on all levels. Even Einstein will say that in the realm of science. One thing is what it is plus its potential. You have to analyze something not only for what it is now, but what all that it can be in terms of potential. We kind of lose sight of that. So the soul is something, but the soul has potential. Now my first book is basically all about that. What's the prospect of the jiva under the shelter of bhakti? What's the potential of the soul under that particular influence? Daibim prakriti mashritaha mahatmanastu mamparta, Krishna says. When you put yourself under the influence, take shelter of the divine energy, okay, the soul can fully actualize its potential. That said, we have to know how to deal with that, because as you say, we can become kind of obsessed with a future version of ourselves and dismissed the fact that whatever potential we can attain begins here and now. we have potential, we can attain so much, but all that starts here now in the present. Because if not, the future just becomes a escapism, an evasive device, like and a torture chamber, basically. Like I could be all that, but I'm not, and I should reach there, and or even like orient our practice just in otherworldly terms. Like I'm here, but my goal is to leave this place and to reach. And we always point like up over there, beyond the clouds, Golagrinda, very far from this place. And we just are concerned with future attainments instead of properly honoring reality in the here and now, properly appreciating even this world of sacred matter in the here and now. So my point is, it all begins where we are now. I mean, we have a potential, we have a becoming, we have a being. Our being includes a becoming. Again, we cannot separate the two. It's not that you are just who you are. No, who you are is what it includes all that you can become. But all that you can become is attained by being who you are here, starting accepting who you are, and even not trying to become something else, like in like escaping from who you are now, so to say. Because sometimes we can have that, even unconsciously, that orientation to our practice. Now, I hate myself so much, so to say. We spoke about self love these days. Now I'm speaking about the opposite of that. I hate myself so much that I want to really become a pure devotee. But only because I hate myself so much at present. I dislike so much the present version of myself that I will make so much sacrifice to become something else than this. And that's not the idea, of course. That's not the idea to motivate our practice. That's not very loving to Krishna or even to ourselves, actually. No. Our practice is based on self-rejection. So you can imagine, just only can imagine what's the fruit of that practice. So again, as we tried to talk a few days ago, we have to gain some self-acceptance. We have to find a way to love ourselves for who we are as Atma. Again, Krishna is saying in the Gita, Ascharya Bhat, you're amazing. The Atma is amazing. You're a unit of wonder. You are a miracle. You are shockingly extraordinary. I'm not exaggerating. All that means, Ascharya means all that. I'm just repeating what Krishna says to each of you. You are all that. So first, we have to come to terms with that. We have to make peace with ourselves. So our practice is not just an escape from seeing ourselves in a bad light. So when we can accept ourselves for who we are, then we can embrace our full potential in a healthy way. And not speak about becoming just as an escape of what I have not solved in the here and now. So, yeah, for me, that's the point. We like to talk about potential, all that we can be, our bright future, so beautiful. But all that has to be balanced with presence in the here and now. Because, yes, future, so much is there waiting for us. But all that will happen as much as you can see how much already is coming now in the here and now. Srila Siddhar Maharaj will say, your future is brilliant. But that doesn't mean your present is crap. Right? That doesn't mean that. When he say your future is brilliant, doesn't mean, but your present better don't speak. Let's only talk about the future, because now it's like horrible. How my future will be brilliant if I'm seeing my present in the opposite way. Your future is brilliant. Your present is so as well. Brilliant. And the future will be even brighter if you can appreciate the brilliance of all that is coming now. Not only all that you are as a soul, but all the opportunities that are knocking your door, all the grace that is coming, all the Sangha that you are receiving, all the mercy that is being poured upon us on a daily basis, all the extraordinary moments. I mean, if we really want to be strict in this, is there's nothing but extraordinariness.
Extraordinariness.
Oh. There's nothing else, technically speaking. You don't need to expect to have a UFO landing in your courtyard or to see some angels or special lights. It's just remind yourself that every atom is inhabited by God. That's it. There you have it. Every atom, Brahma Samhita is saying, God is fully present there. You may not see it, but just to reflect on that, it's like, wow, okay. That's extraordinary. So that's your present is extraordinary. But you have to be present in the present. The problem with us is that we lack presence, generally. That's basically the source of all our problems. We lack presence. Everything is already there, but we are somewhere else. That's why we need to pay attention in the proper direction, because we are supremely distracted from the fact of everything is already there. That's what Sukadev Goswami said to Parikshit Maharaj in the beginning of the Bhagavatam. Parikshit was concerned, like, I have only 7 days to live. So is that enough time to reach my goal? And Sukadev Goswami chuckled and said, just one instant of proper presence is more than enough. If you just pay attention in the proper direction for a nanosecond, you're there.
How did he say that?
Sorry?
Do you remember the verse that he said?
No, but I'll provide eventually the reference. Sorry for that. I'm failing. I know. I'm sorry. And the opposite, no? A whole lifetime of distraction is not enough. One moment of proper attention, presence, is enough. No? So to be Krishna conscious basically means that. No? To acquire awareness, presence of the fact that who Krishna is and how present Krishna is already right here, right now. It's not so much about, well, when I get there, Golok, three lifetimes or someplace, Krishna, he's fully present already. I mean, God is omnipresent. What does it mean? Omnipresent means he's everywhere, everywhere, every time, every place. Again, we may not feel that, so that's the challenge at hand. Let's be present to that miracle. There is such a miracle going on, and I'm missing the party, so to say. I'm looking in the different direction. So the whole sadhana is trying to redirect my attention so I can become aware of the fact that, wow, oh, Krishna is there in that pillar. That was Prahlad's vision when Hiranyakasipu asked him, so where's your God? And he said, where is he not? I'm seeing him everywhere. No, so, so yeah, presence is very important. Sattva means a lot with that. No, I mean, sattva is a very important preliminary place to attain the fullest vision. No? Tamas means past. I live in the past. Toxic nostalgia, lamentation, trying to revive things that have already passed. Dark place to be. Rajas means future only, like have to attain that goal-oriented. That's our modern society, just goal-oriented, goal-oriented. You have to reach this to be accepted. You have to and sattva means you don't have to reach anything. You have to be present. Shakshitva in Sanskrit. Shakshitva means, which means witnesshood. Because you cannot say witnessness, right? So the art of being a witness. That's the Bhagavatam how it describes Shakshitva. Be witness. Witness what's going on. Be present to whatever already is happening. That's the ideal way of chanting japa or the Hari, this whole. Try to be present in what you are doing. And again, I know it's not easy because we live in a society which is crafting distraction in more and more wondrous ways. And there is a tragedy in that, but a genius in that, in the sense that they know the more distracted you are, the easier we can manipulate you, the weaker you are. The more you lose focus, the more you lose your capacity to absorb yourself in something, easily we can manipulate you. So we are bombarded in multi directions, and we do many things at the same time, all superficially. But when it's time to do one thing deeply, we are losing that capacity of being present fully. So we are present, fragmented presence, which is another way of saying absent. Because if I will have a multitasking conversation with all of you at the same time, one word here, one word, how much present I am? That's absence, another way of crafting absence in a way that looks like presence. It's very tricky. So I know we are in a complex scenario in Kali Yuga. But sadhana has to do with that, no? Like reclaiming presence, no? Reclaiming that moments of presence and trying to, as much as we can, align our life to honor our attention, to honor our capacity of focus and absorption, because that's all we can offer ultimately Krishna. No? That's what he asks in his ultimate request in the Gita, Manmana, the most important verse of the Gita and the most important part of the most important verse of the Gita, Manmana, which is, man means mind, mana means manmana, give me your mind to me, basically, your mind to me. And your mind means your attention, your presence. No, he's not saying, give me your multitasking mind thinking in 300, to me. No, your mind to me means to me. No? Absorb, focus, ekiha. No? Not like multi-branched. Vibhyasayadmikabuddhi. No, ekiha kurunandana. And it's an art to craft our attention, our presence, our absorption, so we can make it full, an offering of full presence. Of course we can. But it's possible. We have to train that in our relationships with one another. So learn to be present for each other. Learn to listen to one another. Tadatmya. Learn to be empathic with one another. To be there for the person. Not judging. Not passing filters. But just purely witnessing what's going on. Receiving fully as Krishna is receiving us fully. All that means presence. Presence. Presence.
Oh. What was that book that I saw early on? I don't remember reading it. Was that? I always remember the title, Be Here Now.
Be Here Now, Ram Dass.
Yeah.
There are many like that. The Power of Now, Eckhart Tolle. There are many books, and many of them have many interesting things there. Yeah. I read The Power of Now recently. You know. I mean, there are many things that are like, this is powerful, The Power of Now. And the whole book revolves around that, no? The art of being present and how all problems stem from that, the absence of that. And it's interesting. Okay. It never says it's easy, but it says basically there's no other way around it. If we don't learn to be present, we are just evading reality, basically. Because reality only happens in the present. Doesn't happen in the future or in the past. If you want to have an experience, you can only have an experience in the present moment. You cannot have an experience in the past or in the future. You can have an experience of something you went from the past, but the experience is in the present. So you can only meet Krishna in the present. Sorry?
Life is what happens while we're busy making plans.
Yeah. Mulaka, you raised your hand a while ago.
So. And you answered a lot, and it was to what you were saying. Okay, I'm going to like tell you how like my sadhana goes. So in the morning, you know, and I get up, and every morning, and I feel like I'm becoming more present. I keep bringing to the name. I do. You know, I'm not saying, you know, but I have to keep pulling it back. So I'm present. Keep pulling it back. And I'm grateful for the blessings in my life. You know, I'm really aware of all of that. That being said, by the end of the day, I'm like, oh, my God, I'm not there yet. Or, like, like there's somewhere where how to say, you know,
discrepancy.
Yeah, like I'm present, but there's more. I need to go further.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I'm not saying I'm totally present. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying I'm practicing that.
Yeah.
But there is somewhere else for us to go. Right.
What do you mean by that?
To become purified enough to remember Krishna at every moment. Like, uh-huh. Remember Krishna at every moment. Uh-huh. You can do
uh-huh.
that.
Uh-huh.
You know. So, but and as I get older and been doing this for a while, I'm trying to bring my attention to all that. But I feel like I'm failing. I guess that's the end of each day.
Yeah.
Okay, you didn't like remember that much of Krishna today. Mm. I tried my best, but not my best wasn't enough.
Mm.
So that question, what was the thing that you said?
Becoming.
Becoming.
Yes. Yeah, I get the point. Yeah, thank you for sharing. Yeah, I would say, of course, your experience is not only yours. Welcome to the club of the failing ones. But I will say that also we have to be we have to be expert in dealing with that sense of failure, because it can really take us down, no? But feeling okay, it was all failure, the whole day was useless, another day without hearing Krishna's flute. In vain, time is spent. No, I've seen the devotees getting obsessed with negativity in that direction. And again, the point is, it's delicate because, as I say before, the prospect in Krishna consciousness is, as I was reading from Prabhupada, it's ever fresh. So it's endless. You can always grow more. You can always become more. So if you take that to the extreme, and you're not handling that sustainable in the present, you go crazy and you get super discouraged, because it's never enough, because you can always love Krishna more. You can always love Krishna more. And I'm not doing that yet. And I'm not, the point is, there's no limit for that. So you follow my point? So we need to balance that, because it's an eternal prospect of ever unfoldingness. And that has to be managed in a sustainable way day to day, in the sense of, I'm not yet there, but what does it mean to be there? Once you are there, it's still expanding forever. You follow? It's, even the official day that you receive your card-carrying member of Golok Vrindavan, you are a participant of the Leela, to say in some way, any of us, it doesn't mean that, okay, I'm in the Leela, I'm in now. So now I don't have anything else to expand or to develop. I don't have to love Krishna more. I'm already on the other side of the rainbow or whatever. No. In one sense, at that moment, the real growth and expansion begins, so to say. Somehow, Jiva Goswami says something like that. No, your life of sadhana bhakti is a preparation for the real thing. Not to say what you are going through now, it's useless, but just to make the point, when you achieve bhava bhakti, prem bhakti, okay, now we are talking seriously about this thing. Now everything starts to expand and grow unlimitedly. But of course, you can only reach there by engaging in sadhana bhakti. So he will say sadhana bhakti is kind of the preliminary rites before the actual yajna. He gives that example. You have a yajna, but we need to get wood first. So, okay, go and cut some wood from the forest. The cutting of the wood is not, technically speaking, a part of the yajna, but it's a preliminary act, but it's part of the yajna. You cannot do the yajna without that. So somehow he says sadhana bhakti is this preliminary setting, this preparation of the heart, this pulling off the weeds, and as we hear different ways of expressing it, this setting the stage for the lila to be performed in our hearts, ultimately, let's put it like that. So it's glorious in its own way. When I'm saying it's preliminary, I'm not saying it's not that important. It's glorious. So I will say that sometimes we perceive something as a failure, but in one sense we could frame it differently in terms of, I'm getting closer to something that has no end. So I will always be getting closer. But that doesn't mean that I have to frame that as failure. You follow my point? Because potentially you can frame that as something beautiful and inspiring and full of hope, but we can also choose to label that as failure. And imagine multiply that for a few years, failure, 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 instead of hopeful, 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 hopeful. So the same thing, framed different, can be a source of hope and inspiration. But even if someday we fail, because one thing is I'm trying to get closer, but the closer I get, the more it's, I'm always two steps. The goal is always two steps ahead of me because of the ever-evolving nature of that. That's one thing. But also some days we can actually fail. We can actually mess it up, so to say. So that's an opportunity to be humbled by that failure. So that's okay. That's necessary also, I would say. We have some, I would say that our practice will like navigate between these two currents, if you will. One will be like inspiration and hope. And sometimes you will experience humbling failure. Yeah. Inspiring hope, humbling failure. Inspiring hope, humbling failure. But the failure is humbling. So that has a purpose. It's not that this shouldn't be happening. But it has to humble you, not to depress you. That's important. There's an actual failure. You have to deal with this, with that in a way that is humbling. And if that makes you humbler, how much you can call it a failure at the end of the day? You follow? But it's necessary to go through those chapters also. It's not just, I only want inspiring hope. I only want a dopamine-based bhakti practice. We're always there. High, inspiration, enthusiasm. Come on. Rupa was trying to say, utsaha nischaya dhairyat. Utsaha means you have to be enthusiastic. And someone say, okay, but I'm not on that day, Rupa Goswami, with all respect. I'm on one of those days of humbling failure. Say, it's okay, no problem. No? Utsaha nischaya dhairyat. No? So be enthusiastic. Then what he says, try to make some effort with confidence, try to keep engaging. And you say, I'm doing that, but enthusiasm is not coming. You say, dhairyat. Be patient. Be patient. And kind of in those moments, try to sober yourself and to grow and to learn to be patient. No? Faith has to include some form of patience. Actually, faith can be described as Richard Rohr will say, patience with mystery. Mm. You want to relate to Krishna, you are dealing with mystery, I can tell you. He's the ultimate mystery. So you have to be patient with mystery, with the ultimate mystery. You cannot be like, come on, Krishna, show up. Mm-hmm. What do you want? Be clear. What are you saying? You're saying one thing, but then you see something else. Come on, no? Say one thing. No, you're playing the flute over there. Now you're playing the flute over there. I mean, make sense, please. No. He is who he is. No? He moves in a very mysterious way. The other day I was reading the Vishnu Sahasranam, and it says that one of the thousand names of Vishnu, which is Krishna, by the way, they're not two different guys, and one name is Biala, which means snake. Mm. No? And the translation generally is like, he is mysterious like a snake. His movements are unpredictable, like the snake who moves in a crooked zigzag way. Mm. So you have to be patient with that. You cannot just like expect and demand. Now be predictable, Krishna. If you ask Krishna to be predictable, he stops being Krishna. No, you're canceling him in your life. So all this has to do with what we are talking here. I hope you keep it the framework. So some days there will be days that will be more sunny and more cloudy, so to say, internally. But those have to humble us when we are sometimes even not finding hope or not finding meaning in what's going on in my life. It can happen. Even I know this has some meaning, but I cannot draw any meaning from this. No purpose. It's desperating. Okay, go deeper into prayer. Have faith, have confidence, be patient. Why you are so impatient? Be humbled by your lack of patience. Become more dependent on grace. Realize your limitations and take more shelter. All those things are necessary fire that we need to enter daily. So our enthusiasm and inspiration is realistic. And it's just not just a dopamine peak. Dopamine peak is just a grounded experience. So he raised his hand before. Kashishpar.
Thank you, Makaraj. It's really enlightening experience of the discussion. I mean, I personally found that in quite many instances, devotees, when they leave Krishna consciousness, they actually find themselves experiencing the total failure.
Mm-hmm.
Although they might externally, they can criticize, they can say so many things, but ultimately everyone, because Krishna consciousness is the inner process, so one realizes, okay, I failed. And that's extremely painful experience. But from my observation, I could say that in many instances, the society itself, we actually bring up and hold this perfectionism standards. And sometimes even we look like a sports club, you know, you have to be perfect, you have to make some advancements, you know, you have to prove yourself. But at the same time, you know, ultimately, maybe you are not perfect and you may feel that actually I'm not good enough. And this sense of self, the imperfection, it tortures oneself.
Mm-hmm.
It's like you can live for, you know, years, but it's so imperfect and, you know, you cannot focus, you cannot make any, you know, dynamic advancement in your life. Instead of that, you're just realizing you're totally lost. You don't know where you're going. And this is what I've seen in my own experience and experience of other devotees. So how to stop these mental games and this self-judgmental mentality and actually realize what Christians often say, that, you know, God loves you.
Mm-hmm.
Krishna loves you. You're already accepted. You know, Prabhupada loves you. You're already there. So sometimes you have to, I would say, to become a child, you know, feel that kind of feel. And, you know, instead of having philosophic, you know, mindset, you could just feel, okay, you know, relax. You're good, you know, you're good enough. Actually, this is what I heard from Harikesh, if you know, many of you know
Harikesh.
That's what he, in one of his talks, recent talks, I mean, last year, I took part in one of his Zoom calls. So he told that was really made him sad while being within his core, that you're not good enough.
Mm-hmm.
Because you have so many external goals and purposes. And so could you elaborate on that, please?
I recently gave a series of three lectures on that. I know you were not able to come, but the lectures on self-love that I gave these days, in one sense, I mean, I will say something else. I'm not just giving the link. But those three lectures were basically addressing this situation, that to see how much self-loathing and self-deprecation sometimes devotees put on themselves. And instead of realizing Krishna loves me, and starting from that foundation of acceptance. No? Krishna already accepts me. He already loves me. So I don't need to perform. I don't need to become a super Olympic athlete in devotional life, like being perfect, so he loves me. Well, that's a contradiction of terms. To think first become perfect, then God loves you. That's not loving at all. Imagine if I tell you, Kashishpa, I will love you when you are perfect, right? See you soon. Or probably not soon. You don't feel very hope, because you feel, my gosh, I mean, but if someone tells me, I love you despite all your imperfections, that's the most powerful reason to stop being so imperfect. Right? Someone is loving and accepting me as I am. I want to improve and change to love that person even better, so to say. So we have to begin with that foundation. We talk on these days about that. We have to begin with an ontological yes, instead with no. To begin saying, yes, Krishna loves me, so I'm lovable, I'm loved, and I can be loving, therefore. Because if Krishna is not accepting me yet, is not loving me yet, I'm never good enough, probably I won't try to love anyone either, because I'm crap. I will identify myself as such. And I know that sometimes, unfortunately, our philosophy has been presented or misrepresented as that, in the name of being strict and being humble and being surrendered, which amounted to, you're crap, you're useless, and you're unworthy. Okay? And Krishna is the all attractive and incredible one, but you are like, I don't have words for that. But Krishna is not saying that in the Gita. He's saying, you are amazing, as I said before. So we have to make sense of all the things. If someone tells you, you're unworthy and blah, 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 you just quote Bhagavad Gita 2:29. I'm giving you the exact quote. Krishna is saying, you're amazing, you're amazing, you're amazing. And you ask that person, please explain the verse to me in the context of what you have just said. You have to reconcile all that stuff. You tell me where Krishna says that the soul is crap, please. Where's that Shastra Praman for that? It doesn't exist. But yeah, unfortunately, sometimes our unresolved human trauma, sense of unworthiness becomes filtered with the presentation of our philosophy, and you start creating a process in a way that seems more like, as you say, you know, like a sport competition, and who performs better and who is the top guy. Okay, he, Krishna, loves him most. Him, Gurudev, love him most. Like someone was talking the other day to me, and she told me, yes, in my time in the temple 30 years ago, I was thinking, I have nothing to offer to Krishna. I have no special skills. I'm not a big book distributor. And at that time, the feeling was, Krishna and Prabhupada is only pleased with those who distribute books and know the philosophy very well. She told me that. No? So she felt, I don't have those skills, so I'm nobody. I'm nowhere. And she practiced from that place for decades. No? Of course, fortunately, now she's realizing, as difficult as that is to realize that, but awakening from that trance of unworthiness, as we were talking these days, where you are totally convinced, I'm never enough. So, that's not a healthy orientation. That's totally toxic religion, so to say, in the name of spirituality, in the name of love, in the name of the most noble and beautiful ideals. You're just perpetrating trauma. And all of us mostly come to Krishna consciousness with our baggage of trauma. No? So the last thing we want is to maximize that. But many times it happens. Or sometimes, as we saw, it's taught on the first lecture, we may have to come to bhakti with some trauma, but without some other trauma, and we acquire that new trauma in bhakti. And we become convinced that's the only way to be a devotee, that's the only way to belong, that's the only way to be accepted in this group. I have to see myself as And in time, the phalena farichyate, you judge the tree by its fruits, and the fruits are bitter or not sweet, and you're getting depressed and confused and neurotic and dysfunctional. So it's important at that point to realize, actually, that's not Krishna consciousness. And to separate yourself from that version of Krishna consciousness and be willing to discover the actual Krishna consciousness. Of course, unfortunately, sometimes devotees only knew that version, became traumatized by that, and then concluded, I'm out of here. This is a cult, this is whatever, because they never received a proper presentation of what's the actual tradition. So that's why it's so crucial to meet proper representatives. And if something doesn't make sense, something is really counterintuitive to your deepest intuition, you have to put some filter there. No, we shouldn't accept blindly anything. That's also part of our responsibility also. If I go to a place and they tell me a whole bunch of things which I feel, this is cultish and traumatizing and weird, if you choose to submit yourself to that, that's part of your responsibility also. So it's, everything has to be put on the scale, right? So, but yeah, I agree that that's an unfortunate situation, but if we are sincere in our journey also, we will remain open to this intuition that L tells us there must be another way of doing this. There must be a healthy way to relate with God. Krishna cannot be that ugly as these guys are depicting him. No, cruel and merciless and just demanding performance from me or perfection. We are not perfect. And Krishna is not waiting for that. Like I was, again, when I was talking with Father Richard Rohr, we did this podcast, and he, one of the high points was, he already said that before, but I had somehow forgotten that line. It's a genius like line. He said, like, perfection doesn't exclude imperfection. Perfection must include imperfection. Mm-hmm. That's the actual perfection. Actual perfection includes imperfection. Does not exclude imperfection. Richard Rohr, Father Richard Rohr, a Franciscan friar that recently was in my podcast, and we are friends. Yeah, so that's the spirit of real perfection. Again, Krishna is perfect, perfectly loving, perfectly merciful, and he includes us in our imperfection as we are now. That's a real symptom of actually someone who is perfect. Someone is perfect will not tell you, you become perfect. If the person demands perfection from you, that speaks about his imperfection instead of yours. You follow? If that person tells you, you are so imperfect, and until you become perfect, that speaks about the imperfection of that person. Because if a person is really perfect, that person is not interested in demanding perfection. His, her own perfection will love despite imperfection. That's how Krishna loves us, and that's how Krishna's love should be represented in this world through his agents, who will extend that same type of unconditionality, not conditional love, conditions, first this, first that. And I know most of us have received some dose of that, whether with devotees, whether with some dysfunctional relationship with our parents in some cases, and we are just like, we receive the notion that, again, you are not enough until you deserve it. So we just be entering into a journey of deserving. No? But it's never enough. It's never enough. So we self-sabotage ourselves at every step. Instead of taking a rest from that and acknowledging the most important person, God, already accepts me in the most important way, loving me. So the most important thing is already happening by the most important person. I can take a break from my own self-loading and torturous mind and take shelter in that. Take rest, but shelter and nourishing in that fact that I'm loved. And on that foundation, I can live and love joyfully and happily. Sukham Kartum, Krishna says in the Gita, right? Bhakti is meant to be practiced with lots of happiness and joy. Again, this is not just dopamine peak, it's just a deep, profound sense of joy and hope, starting with the fact that Krishna already loves you. Krishna already accepts you. It's not about I'm not worthy, I'm never enough, blah, 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 blah. I mean, Krishna doesn't speak that language. He's not a good mathematician, no? Like adding 1 + 2, you have to reach this number and you will deserve. He really loves you with all your imperfections. That's how he works. No? That's in the Bhagavad Gita, Suridam Sarvabhutanam. Krishna says, I'm the best friend of every single living entity. I have a full compassionate heart for every single living entity. The other day, I don't recall the Sanskrit for that, but in this 1,000 names of Vishnu, suddenly they were in the room in the library. So let's see. And one of them was, I don't recall the Sanskrit, sorry, but I have it some notes there. And one of the names is, I remember what you told me the other day, Shamsaki, wet. You say that, what it was, the other word, the word was not wet, was something else, right? Which was wet. So one name of Krishna is, one name of Krishna is wet.
Wet?
Wet.
W-E-T?
Yeah, wet. Yeah, in Sanskrit, of course, it's something else. But the implication of the wetness is he's dripping with mercy. Mm-hmm. That's interesting. One of the thousand names of God is wet. No? He who is wet with grace and love, that's dripping from him. It's too much. It's overflowing his own self. So that's the love, the God we worship. No, not one who is like a judge, angry parent, perform, be perfect. If not, I'll be angry. No, and blah, 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 blah. That's our unresolved issues projected into the divine. But that needs therapy. That's another department. We need to solve that instead of messing that with who Krishna is and what bhakti is. Because if we get wrong who Krishna is, we get wrong everything else. Or even if we get wrong who we are, we get wrong everything else. That's the problem with this. If you get the wrong idea of who you are, you probably project that to everything else. Or if you get the wrong idea of who God is, the root of everything, probably you project that mistake to everything else. So that's why it's so important to have proper sambandha gyan, to know what is what, who is who, and how is who. So to say, it's not only say, sambandha gyan means to know Krishna is the Supreme Personality of God, that I'm a spiritual soul, and I'm his eternal servant. Yes, but also sambandha gyan means, and Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is dripping wet with unconditional love. And you, as this Atma, are the recipient of that love, and you are accepted fully by him. That's also extended sambandha gyan. You have to reach that point. So that type of conclusion takes you to Abhideya, takes you to the practice, to practice from that place. Having received those news, wow. I have to do something now. Let's celebrate. Susukam Kartum, that we call doing bhakti from that place. Anyhow, big part of my book on radical personalism is also an attempt to address the practice of bhakti from a more human place, healthy place, sustainable place, commonsensical place. Because for me, myself, many times I felt like, yeah, there are ways that I cannot practice bhakti any longer like this. I need to find a new way to make the practice relatable and relevant for me. So all of us have to constantly work on this. It's not just, okay, this is the formula and this is how you can do it forever. No, yeah, we forever chant, but how we chant, from which place, what we need to work in, that will shift constantly. We have to. It's a constant dialogue and conversation. What to speak if we have wrong ideas about this? That's why Bhaktivinoda Thakur will say, when he will describe anartha nibriti, the different anarthas that we have to overcome, and he says that in one sense he will say the first one to overcome is tattva vibhrama, which means to have confusions about tattva or siddhanta. And for me, an extension of that is what we are talking now. If you have the wrong idea about how to practice who Krishna is, how he loves you and doesn't, all that is tattva vibhrama. Is you have a wrong idea about who is who, what is what. So first you have to clarify that. Because if that's not clarified, you will practice with a lot of wrong ideas, and that will become, again, source of trauma, dysfunction, discouragement, and as you say, sadly, sometimes leaving the practice altogether and not having a good time after that either. Having to heal from that. I mean, I think all of us have some experience firsthand, secondhand of that. So we are here in the survival camp. So, some thoughts. I hope that helps, Ashishwar. Thank you. Thank you for your question. So, Rachel, raise your hand. Yes. You also raise your hand, but
that's all right.
I'm giving some turns to those who you raise your hand. I gotta talk. I gotta talk a lot. Yes, Rachel.
Yeah. This might be a bit of a branch of what we're speaking on, but I was thinking about how you described how like the nature of love is that it's immediate, that the more that we obtain that taste of love, the more love we want. And then thinking of people, like the goal in bhakti is really high. And there's a lot of shoulds that happen, like I should do this or I should do that, or I need to do more seva, or I need to read more, I need to chant more. So I guess I wonder if there's like contentment that is in bhakti. Like, can we be content with where we are and not take a back seat and also not want to be somewhere else? Like, can that word be practiced in bhakti?
Yeah, thank you. Contentment. Yeah, of course. Those are qualities of of the devotee as well. In santushta, for example, that's a word, santushta. And that appears in the Bhagavad Gita many times when a devotee, the qualities of a devotee are described. One of them is santushta or tushta. Tushta means satisfied or content. Santushta means like fully, fully satisfied, fully content, and so on. So there is place for that. I mean, again, contentment doesn't mean stagnation. It doesn't mean complacency. I will say contentment is a form of appreciation. No? Like, okay, you are where you are now, and you can appreciate where you are now instead of like, but I have to be in the next level already. No, it's not like a run to be always better, because again, that's the type of perfectionist performance. Like, never enough. I know I can be more, so I have to be more. And it's like, so there is place to observe, so to say, to take rest and to observe what you have, what had come to your life, where you are today, now, and to be content with that, which doesn't mean that you will always be there, because of, again, the very nature of life is dynamic. So even if you want to remain content for too long, life is already inviting you to a new level of contentment. So you can even describe your progress in that way. A new level of contentment. It's not that, oh, the contentment is over now. No, no, you are invited to a new level of contentment. But for that, you have to attain that level first. But yeah, I will say there is place for that in the in the journey. No? Like we can depict the spiritual life as a journey. That's a word we can use. Yatra in Sanskrit. Yatra means journey or pilgrimage. So we are, it's like a journey. So sometimes you are traveling and you are going through different landscapes. Sometimes in the journey, you will go quicker. Sometimes you have even to walk backwards to take some impulse and run and jump. So it seems you are going backwards, but actually it's to gain momentum and further advance. That happens also in the practice. And sometimes you are traveling and you are in some landscape and you need to take some rest and you can see it. Contemplate the beauty of the place and be content about it. It doesn't mean the journey is over and I'll stay here forever. You will know when's the time to wake up and continue. So you are integrating and appreciating that particular chapter. So the same with this, the inner journey. You know? There's place for stopping, take a pause. But in that pause, you are appreciating. Contentment is not just a selfish exploitation, like, I am here only for me and I'm so incredible, I reached that goal for myself. That's not contentment. It's just a pause to appreciate the gifts that are with me in this particular chapter of my journey, which is a miracle. It's being present. Again, we were talking about presence. Contentment is also just learning to be present too. What has come. It's not that you are sinful for doing that. Come on, wake up, do service. Come on, you have to do more. Again, we enter into the performing stage when we enter into that. Do more human doings, not only human beings, right? So, yeah, there is place to experience contentment, which again is a way of reflecting further on the nature of where you are and the gift that has taken you there, and that will be humbling and that will increase your faith, and it's a way of being introspective and contemplative and vigilant and deep, you know, like, okay, yes, thank you. It's a way of it being grateful, basically. You know, it's gratitude. Contentment is a form of gratitude again. Because it won't be for a devotee like a source of arrogance, like I'm content because of what I have attained for myself, by myself. That's not. But it's an acknowledgement of the blessing that is coming. So actually, not only is not bad, contentment, but it's a necessary ingredient of the journey. Because if not, we are going too fast. We're just running after the next goal and the next attainment. And instead of appreciating each gift, and we are just like frenetically running and making it a perfectionist, performative, paranoid marathon or running, and instead of like incorporating each stage, you know, integrating each journey and saying thank you and being grateful and moved by that and moving forward. So yeah, contentment is important. And that will help a lot, as you mentioned, about the all these shoots and haps. No, I have to do, I need to do whatever, no, all this type of stuff. I was looking for a quote that I was sent by a friend of mine. Let's see. Yeah, here it is. In connection to this idea that sometimes we are motivated in our practice, but I have to, I should. And I'm not saying that's totally bad in every moment. Sometimes we need to push a little bit. Okay, I know you are when you are a mother and your baby's crying and for milk, and you want to sleep, but you have to wake up. There is place for I have to, no? But also there is place for choosing. Behind the I have to is also I chose to have a baby. And I love my baby, and I choose to love my baby. And okay, it's not so much I have to, I want it. So ideally, our practice should be motivated by that. I want to, no? Just to quote some with this, I'm concluding because we're almost more than 1 hour and a half. So two quotes that were sent by Kishore Das, a friend of mine from Sweden, disciple of Sadananda Swami, who is a disciple of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. So he shared this. He said, he told me, I heard a little of a class of yours, no idea which class, but and came to think of these words of Sadananda. He always very nicely does this type of thing. He hears, listens to some class, and that reminds me of this thing that Sadananda sent. He sends me like an article or some quote. So I really appreciate it. So he sent me these two lines. One is, a bhakta is he who performs the limbs of bhakti with bhakti. Right? Repeat for a second time for better impact. Okay. A bhakta is he or she who performs the limbs of bhakti with bhakti. So again, it's not just performing, doing stuff, but with bhakti, you know, with your heart, with intention. And the other one is, that may be shocking for some, but I will read it. Sadananda Swami is known for being shock-inducing person, and I appreciate that. Read only when you have the incentive to do so. Do everything that comes from your heart, from Shraddha in his seva, not under compulsion. So, okay, again for Katie. Again, or it's too much, two times?
Yeah, again.
Again?
Again.
Okay, it's been recorded, so then you can play back to take notes. Read, of course, read and apply, extend that to other things, and try to understand the context from where he's saying this. Read only when you have the incentive to do so. Do everything that comes from your heart, from Shraddha in his seva, faith in his service, not under compulsion. Again, the idea of this is Krishna wants your heart. Krishna wants your faith. No? He doesn't want your compulsion, your fear, your paranoia. He wants that whatever you offer is voluntary. It's intentional. That's what he takes from the offering. So as much as we can, we invest that when we feel that. If we don't feel that, instead of forcing ourselves to do it, maybe we can spend some introspection on why I don't want to do it. Have some conversation. So we conclude, I want to do it from the right place instead of just forcing myself to. Again, sometimes it's healthy, as I mentioned, in some cases, okay, I have to do it. But also be careful of going to the extreme of the I have to do it. No? So that's the balancing idea here. So that's it. With these beautiful words of Swami Sadananda, I'll conclude. Probably there are more questions, more things to share. So in that case, if you are able, we will welcome your presence this coming Saturday at our Tennessee Displays. We'll have the last session of Istagoshti at 5:30. So thank you so much again for being here, for your presence, for joining in this constellating around our common center, Istagoshti. And see you soon. Sri Sachinandam Gaur Hari Ki Jai, Sri Harinam Prabhu Ki Jai, Sadhu Sangha Ki Jai, Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai, Gaur Premananda Hari Bol, Pancha Kalpataru Vishya, Kripa Sindhu Hei Vacha, Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo, Ananta Koti Vaishnavebhyo Ki Jai, Gaur Hari Bol.